Well, good morning. I'd like to add a little bit to what Tom has just presented about Jerry's work in Jornada and the Sevilleta, and I hopefully won't overlap too much. But I got to know Jerry. I saw Jerry mostly during these semi-annual meetings in New Mexico, and it was always a pleasure to see him there. It was such a positive force during the research time. I enjoyed it very much, but he did say, you didn't want to go to Jornada days and eat the beef there because it would break your teeth. So obviously, we're not studying the Jornada range for
change the cattle.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. So the things I'd like to point out today are the five things that Jerry's played a role in for the Jornada and the Sevilleta. Remote sensing studies between 1995 and 2010. And part of that is that this is a very unusual study because it's such a long term, and there haven't been many long-term remote sensing-based studies. And Jerry's role in that has been really very important. So the first is to validate remote sensing data, which Tom had just talked about. It's to do the semi-annual monitoring of the land cover change. That's because, of course, the rains came in and greened up the desert regions, grasslands, and shrubs. To identify the scales at which we had to use remote sensing, because obviously remote sensing instruments vary in the resolution and time and space, and we want to use the best instruments possible for monitoring. And we want to develop ways to measure water use, so plant water use of evapotranspiration studies, particularly in an area where water is so scarce. And lastly, I'm not sure how much Jerry involved with fire. We saw some studies with fire, but there's obviously fire management in Sevilleta, and I wanted to show you a few slides there. So again, this is an overall map of the Chihuahuan Desert. And the thing is, the Chihuahuan Desert is larger than the state of California. And if you look at it simply as a place to grow tough beef, I guess you wouldn't be very impressed by the desert. But it's reputed to be one of the most diverse deserts around. It's the second largest desert in North America outside of the Great Basin, so it's quite important. And I think it also has a relevance for global climate change studies, because what we see here can be used to understand albedo properties, water use properties elsewhere in other deserts. And so again, here is an image of the Jornada Experimental Range. It lies between White Sands Missile Range there on the northeast part of the picture and Las Cruces, a heavily agricultural area using Elephant Butte Reservoir water. And this is the Sevilleta, which Little Seville, I guess it was a Spanish patent, and eventually became a rangeland in the early 1930s, and eventually became part of U.S. wildlife. Fish and Wildlife Service, and that indicates here the deep well and Five Points are two study areas that Jerry would drive 4 or 5 hours. I'm not sure how many hours it was, Carol, to get up there, but it was a major effort, and I'd say well worth it. So here is, again, collecting more ASD data. More recently, I believe this is 2007, and so we're doing some validation studies with a spectral radiometer, and this is a repeat of what Tom showed, which essentially shows that the ASD measurements agree pretty well in the visible wavelengths, and they diverge in the shortwave infrared. Pretty agreement with satellite data, and less good agreement with master aircraft. Of course, the virtue, as I said earlier, of doing these measurements is not just doing it one time, and not just doing it twice, pre- and post-monsoonal, but to do this repeatedly over a time period, because this desert at one time was dominated by grass, is now dominated by mesquite and creosote bush, and we'd like to see if those changes are proceeding in a particular direction and response to drought and response to active management practices. And so here's an illustration of some 11-year change. I don't claim that these are the final word on these changes, but just it's illustrative of how that multispectral data can show you the changes at different sites. For example, the Jornada had increased vegetation in these 2 years, 97 and 2008, whereas in the Sevilleta, the vegetation apparently decreased at those sites, and particularly you can see that change in the infrared wavelengths. Much has been said about Jerry breaking his back doing LAI at early morning and dusk. Well, I found that particularly important for the study in the thermo-infrared work that I did with Jerry and Tom and Outrango. And it's based on the fact that in the thermo-infrared, we can use those bands to look at vegetation regardless of plant greenness. But in order to validate that study, we needed LAI data. And the only LAI data we had was from Jerry. This is the Jornada experimental range here. We see the lower same areas we've seen before. Las Cruces is underneath the numbers there, the agricultural region, and then the yellow regions are the low emissivity soils of Jornada. And what we found was that over a period of 3 years, that there was distinct regions, as outlined in that red circle area there, where the land apparently degraded, where the LAI decreased. And we couldn't see that pattern with standard vegetation indices. But you can see it with thermal emissivity measurements. And we wouldn't have been able to have done any of that if we hadn't had the LAI data from Jerry. And of course, the other aspect of the study was looking at scale studies, to look at the effect of spatial resolution of remote sensing instruments, because of course, we don't want to be going out there all the time with ASDs and LAI measurements. We want to be able to do this from space where we have frequent overpasses, but we can't resolve everything, so we have to decide what can be resolved frequently, but at coarse resolution, illustrated by the upper right, or by less frequent in time, but high resolution, as illustrated by the aircraft and other instruments in the lower left. And so one of the things that Jerry was part of was acquiring a CONUS satellite data, which gave us a way to measure what I call the operational scale. In this case, it's the Mesquite area, and we could look at that and measure with spatial statistics what the operational scale of that. What would you need to resolve Mesquite did? How would you quantify the abundance and distribution of that? In this particular case, is around 8 meters, which is very fine resolution. And one of the things that Tom had pointed out was that we have this NASA-sponsored aircraft called Instrument with Master. It has 50 bands. And that aircraft would fly over periodically twice a year, earlier in the 2000s and now more recently, over Jornada. It helps calibrate the satellite data with this 50 bands. And this shows you just the trade-off that you have between frequently observed data on the right-hand side would be MODIS, which is freely available to everybody, but pretty fuzzy imagery as contrast by higher resolution ASTER data on the left. So we're trying to find a way to combine the benefits of both. Here's one proposed idea. On the left-hand side is a way to thermally sharpen the work that Bill Koussis has done with others on sharpening thermal data using NDVI. And another possibility is to use thermal emissivities in conjunction with those NDVIs to add additional information so allow us to get higher spatial resolution data. So the scheme that might be possible is illustrated here, where you start with coarse resolution, 1 kilometer data, and you could combine high resolution NDVI and lower resolution emissivity into a combined data product to give you frequent land surface temperature. And why would we care about land surface temperatures? Because we're trying to understand evapotranspiration on a daily, monthly, yearly, week scale, and how they're related to land cover changes. And so this is just an illustration of what we'd like to accomplish operationally, although it's clearly not operational yet, as these different patterns we could see over a period of years where in the top is irrigated lands, and you can see the latent heat flux, how it cycles across the year. And over the rangeland, it's a much more erratic, spiky, and that's the accumulated precipitation there. It just shows you that we can correlate rainfall events with high LE, high latent heat flux events, and shows that the model appears to be working on occasion. And lastly, I'd like to mention about the Sevilleta National Wildlife Refuge, which was kind of a long drive to get up there, and so most of us didn't want to do it, but Jerry did, Carol did, and went up to the two sites, and there's a thermal grid up there. There's also some LAI transects. And what I started to look at these only very recently with the ASTR data, and you can see there have been quite a few fires in an area called Mackenzie Flats in the eastern part of the Sevilleta. You can see the dates here ranging from 2001 wildfire, 2002, 3, and 9. And you can look at the series of images outlined in the red box there, and you can see how the vegetation has been wiped out by fire and where it hasn't been and how it's recovered. Here's a slightly larger image to show you the illustration. So my understanding is that they would find these data quite useful for verifying what's happened with fire management. I've also started to look at the shortwave infrared from ASTR, which fortunately or unfortunately is no longer functioning on ASTR. It gives you additional information that's not possible in the visible near-infrared wavelengths, and the atmosphere seems to be particularly clear in there. So we can see some patterns that aren't possible in other ways. So this is an interesting outcome from just something as simple as LAI transects at Sevilleta. So I'd just like to leave you with a comment that, well, we've done semi-annual monitoring at Hornada and Sevilleta. It's a long-term rangeland study. Jerry's work has allowed us to do validation, and so I just say that it's been a pleasure working with him, and we'll see him down the road. Thanks.
Any questions for Andy? Andy, I have a couple for you. These results been used at all in managing those areas, you know, in terms of any future plans? How is it sort of interacting with the management of the areas?
Well, I don't really know the answer. I mean, Al Rangel would be probably a good person to talk to about that. But what they're doing now is they're running UAVs frequently, monitoring the rangeland at quite low cost. So I think the answer is they are. I just don't know what those decisions are.
So in a way, those are aerial vehicles that are unmanned?
Yeah, they have a special permission to fly this aircraft. It can fly for 2 hours with remote sensing instruments, fly for 30 miles away, come back, transmit the data, live streaming. It's quite an accomplishment. So Hornada has come quite a long way since 95.
Still a lot of research going on in that area?
There is, although things will shift. The initial emphasis of remote sensing data is going to change in the next few years. I'm sure there'll be maybe fewer aircraft data and more UAV acquisitions.
So that airplane that you guys had before with the pilot, that those types of things are not going to be used as much anymore?
I think they find it too expensive.
Does the pilot retire?
I heard they had problems with cost with storing the airplane too and moving around from place to place.
It was down west of the coast, so they would bring it up west of the coast.
That's what the pilot was. What did the pilot do any other times? We have some time, so I'm going to try and see if we can get too much. I don't want to sort of run too far ahead of ourselves.
He's retired to Singing Hill, but
yes. So in between flights, he'd go rehearse for his Elvis.
He wouldn't rehearse while he was flying, would you know? in a sense, what you guys have learned from the Hornada experiments is giving you a good snapshot of what's happening with the vegetation there over the years with the higher intensity management that they've had. But now you're looking at ways that you can actually monitor this maybe more frequently and less expensively using and working in that, there are new methods that come out of that?
I think part of the point is that it's not just applicable to Chihuahuan Desert. I mean, you can model the change in albedo, for example, look at energy balance, and see the effect in
and you know what the results are because you've had the ground data, mm-hmm. that could be applied to other deserts of the world, and you could run your land surface models for those places too. I mean, it has global implications because there just aren't very many long-term studies. This is one of the few. So you actually know what's happening.
Well, that reflective state is pretty useful. Yes. Does that thing have applications in more humid areas? I see, you know, this, the one advantage is you have a cloud cover. You know, it's not, there's not too much cloud cover during the year, and you have sort of more your evaporation and transpiration is, and dry areas, dry times are kind of isolated throughout the year. You don't have a constant rainfall and things going on.
Right. That would be a different challenge, but then it wouldn't be a desert.
So yeah, going on, moving on to a temperate area or something.